Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Mojan Sohi. Hi.
Hi. So I sprung a topic on you the last time we were recording, and you threatened to do the same.
You gave me the opportunity. You said next time I can do it.
Oh, I'm getting old. My memory is fading. Yeah, that's it.
Sure, yes. And now, and then before we hit record, I said, would you like me to surprise you with the other topic? And you said, yes.
Yeah, so hit record.
So here we are. Yes. Well, I think you're going to like this. I've been thinking a lot about what are the best ways that organizations can really capture lessons learned. Oh, and okay. I would love to get your thoughts on this, because it's something that I feel very strongly about. I'm sure you do. And I'm sure you've seen many different ways to do this. And I can imagine probably what Carl's answer is going to be, which is also a totally fair answer. That's one way. But I want to really like dig into this, because different, it's something that I guess I'll start with where things can not be done, I guess, the best way. Okay. I think capturing lessons learned is unfortunately very underutilized, commonly, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very impactful tool that unfortunately is kind of forgotten a lot of the times when, you know, after a big problem is solved, usually everyone's relieved and they're like, yeah, we did it. It's amazing.
But we have pizza, we have balloons,
celebrate.
And then we have a problem on Monday morning.
Which is all fair. Yes, exactly. It's all fair. But really, a big step after that should be, how could we have prevented this from happening in the first place? And then more importantly, like, how to institutionalize that knowledge such that, I always tell people that I'm training, imagine 5 years from now, none of us are here. A brand new team of engineers are here. They go to, you know, essentially do a design of the same kind of thing. How do you make sure, how would you communicate this lesson learned to them to make sure they don't fall into the same,
the
mistake, or, you know,
decisions.
The issues that we ran into. And I love getting people's thoughts on this. And, you know, sometimes I get blank stares, and sometimes people mention DFMEAs, which I think maybe what Carl would say.
Have you ever read, no, he wouldn't say that. Have you ever read a DFMEA report that you were not a part of?
Like a DFMEA document that I wasn't a part of?
Somebody gives you a spreadsheet.
It's
boring as sin, and they don't have the conversation there. They don't, there's numbers, but why? Mm. You know, what was in their thinking? It's missing so much information.
Yes.
It's a clue.
The stories, I think, can be, you know, like, and I have some organizations I've seen would do, you know, like a let's get together and actually like go through what happened and such, but it's not very common. So I'm curious what you've seen work really well. What do you think about this? Do you feel about it the same way I feel about it?
It's useful. I've seen so many poor applications of it. And I think there's two approaches that get some traction in value in it. The one, I mean, I could spend 20 minutes talking about all the ways I've seen it just go horribly wrong and worthless, including companies that spend lots and lots of money to record everything and document everything. And then they have this huge database, and they had to hire a whole bevy of librarians, essentially, to sort out the information to what was useful. And so it was, you could look it up in the database. It's sort of like saying, well, everything we know is on the internet. Just go look it up. And and I'm designing a capacitor or location for this, that, and the other thing. And they're like, I might get some clues, but I don't know what we know from our own system and our own design parameters, our own customers' use profiles. The internet doesn't know all that part. So that's along the lines of the worst. And it was very, very expensive. This company was building a huge database of all this I mean, minutes from meetings, every meeting would go into this thing. It was amazing. And it was worthless. You look, you'd search for capacitors, you get, you know, 200,000 hits on it. And you're like, okay, which one of these is useful? So a good way to do it is have a solid FRACAS system, failure analysis, reporting, and corrective action. Or I don't know, I probably got some of them out of order, but if something fails in the building, in your prototyping, in your design processes, or something fails in the field, have a very solid, resilient process to say, oh, what do we need to do to, one, understand how it failed, two, how do we prevent it? And then three, follow up on that prevention. And then how do we get that systemically into the organization? So it might be design guidelines and design rules and never use this vendor again, or don't sell to Bob over down in Cincinnati because he just destroys our products. But something that is a systemic outcome of what you learned. That's only a half step, though, to the best system I've ever seen. And I learned about it during an assessment for an organization. And I got the story from Phil. He was the technical marketing manager for a company, and they were making little electronic circuit boards that used to be a whole circuit board you'd plug your Cat5 cable into, or at that point it was Cat2 or 3, something like that, but your internet cable. And it would translate the signal it was getting into something that the computer could use. And now it's very small and it's built into most everything else, so you don't need this extra board. So they're out of business, but they were rapidly heading to be out of business anyway. Every product launch they did was one major disaster after another, and they were losing market share. They were going to be out of business long before that market dried up. And Phil got called into the general manager's office because there was a scenario, and Phil had nothing to do with it, by the way, but he was the least busy person that this general manager could find because you can't market a product that doesn't work. And the tipping point for them was that when you plug a plastic cable into a circuit, right, it's going to be charged. It's going to dissipate some amount of voltage into your system, and it's called electrostatic discharge. And most systems have a device in the plug that the socket you're plugging into to dissipate that. And in the circuitry, the card itself would have a part of the circuitry that would dissipate a voltage spike or an incursion like that. And then oftentimes the main CPU or whatever was driving that particular system, that logic circuit, would have a ESD protection on incoming voltage lines for power lines. Well, all those three teams working independently and, you know, solving the last set of disasters they had. So they were totally overworked and not enough time. They all three simultaneously removed the ESD protection without ever checking with anybody else. They all made the assumption the other two would be there and that would be sufficient, which is true, except nobody checked. They didn't have time. And they were under pressure to cost reduce. So they just did it. It cost them $700,000 the first quarter of shipments. And it was maybe a $5 to $20 million product line. So now you're spending close to $1 million on failures, which continued through the year before they ever got it under control and solved it. So they nearly went bust just on that one design flaw that they had in their process. And so Phil, remember Phil? He gets called in and says, general manager says, you can never let that happen again. And he's looking, he's like, I'm a technical marketing manager. He says, well, you got veto power. You work with program managers. You influence them to add features or not and stuff like that. How about you influence them so they don't add failures of self-destruct? And he says, great. How many people do you get? None. How much resources do I have? None. When does it have to be in effect? Like 2 months ago. All right. So what would you do?
Are you asking me?
Yeah. Oh. This is not only a surprise for me. I have a story.
I see what you're doing here. I was like, so like just in tune, like let's just listening to you. I'm like, oh, I wonder where this story is going.
But he's under a lot of pressure, right? He's intimate with the design process and the program managers and, you know, kind of the product itself and all the other stuff. He was not, he was quasi nerd-ish guy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But he's got no resources, no time, and can never, and the key phrase that came out of it is, we can never let something we learned happen again. Right. If we learned mm-hmm. it the hard way, we can't let it happen again. And so what they did is they created a system that they called Golden Nuggets. And this guy's in marketing. So he polished it up to sound like pliable thing. And they very quickly figured out from previous lessons learned a hard way, quasi documented, mostly just floating knowledge in the organization. They came up with about 10 things. One is, check your assumptions.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, I was going to say check.
And the underlying story
would be the basic thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But the underlying story was, it cost us $750,000, you know, right off the bat.
Because of assumptions. Yeah.
Because of assumptions. So, but it was just on a list. It was check your assumptions. And the story behind it was a separate document somewhere else. And then there was ceramic capacitors break. That was the line. And then there was a story about how they cheated ceramic capacitors too close to a tie-down screw, and they all got cracks, and they all failed after 3 months. And it was a critical capacitor, so their boards all failed after 3 months. Kind of thing. And it was like, so they replaced a bunch of that. He had a huge warranty hit for it. But every one of them had a story of some magnitude behind it. And I said, that can't be it. Everybody writes down this stuff somewhere.
Yeah.
Right? He says, yeah. But I'm making it a one-page short list. There's 10 items on it, 10, 3 to 5 words, title of something. Now, every one of them has a story behind it. And most of the team now knows those stories. They just need to be reminded of it. And that's the key. That's why it works. And when I ran into him, they've been doing it for a couple of years. And he says, the key is that I walk into the program manager as soon as they're assigned, they're building their team. Who gets to do what? Well, Jean, you got to take care of all the material science stuff. And you know, Chris, you got to take care of all the electronics. And Bill, you do this and so on. And here's how much money we have. And here's our schedule and everything else. So he would walk into the program manager and says, I need 20 minutes of your time. Capacitors crack. What are you going to do in this project to make sure you don't crack capacitors? Well, I'll give that to Chris because he's in electronics, and I'll make sure he knows about it. And if they do this design review, it'll be on this part of the list. It'll be here, here, and here. So Phil's writing all this stuff down. He says, what are you going to do about assumptions? Here's the plan. So he engages with the key decision maker at the point when the program is starting, when it's being formed, when the priorities are being set, when the allocation of resources and priorities are happening. And then it gets inserted into the program at the right moment so that it becomes part of the program. Let's not crack capacitors, kind of thing. It also says to that program manager, whether they'd been there before or not, that you're on notice. Do not crack capacitors. Right? Don't make a mistake we made before. Mm-hmm. And the program manager said, the first time he did it, the program manager said, so what happens now? He says, I'll be back at the final design review. I have veto power whether this ships or not. It's part of my normal role on the organization is I'm on that final design review and I can vote yay or nay, but I also, like the director of engineering, like the director of quality, we can say no. And any one of us can say, no, you don't ship, fix it. And I'm going to ask you before that final design review, what did you do to prevent making assumptions that could lead to disaster. What did you do to prevent capacitors from cracking? And so you put in them on notice, and I'm going to check. And I want evidence that you met, you're not going to see any of these events in the past. And in it was 6 years altogether that I monitored that program and kept touch with them. They had never repeated any of those mistakes and or similar mistakes, right? Once you drop ESD protection three times, as long as there's anybody in the building that remembers it, that'll never happen again. But it was generalized to there's lots of ways to crack capacitors. So how do we make sure that we don't crack them some unique way? Just remembering they're glass, they're fragile. Remembering assumptions count. It only takes a minute to check. Kind of that awareness at the right moment and the hurdle that you got to check step at the end of it was enough to just make it the way they did business. Everybody knew these stories. If it was sort of like that Star Trek episode where they said, you know, Zorak at the river, and it meant something. That was their language. It was all these anecdotes, you know, titles of stories, kind of thing. And the organization just got it. And over time, the other thing I've seen is that they kept it very short list. It had to fit on one page. And it was generally, they were generalized. So it was, you know, like the assumptions one. But if the list got too long, it wasn't, you couldn't keep it in conscience. You couldn't keep the awareness alive at the start of it. So sometimes groups of failures got grouped together and more generalized kinds of things, but it had two stories underneath it. But it was a very short checklist with the program manager, start and finish.
So I have a question. Was Phil there the entirety of the 6 years?
Yes.
See, I think that's a key thing. What would happen if Phil had left?
Oh, hell break. No, I think they had such a solid process that
or what would happen if both the general manager and Phil had left?
Yeah, right? if the quality or the director of engineering, but I could pick it up. I taught it to so many other organizations. The concept is really, really simple.
Right? Yes, but someone needs to make sure that responsibility is carried forward.
Right.
And I think that's the point at which this could break.
Well, no, that's a dilemma that's generic to reliability engineering in general, is that if we do everything well, nothing fails unexpectedly. And they look at you going, Michonne, why are you here? This just works.
It's hard to provide the value when everything is going right.
That's right. But this group had like 2 years of disaster after disaster. They're running products out every 4 months, and every one of them was a disaster to various degrees. Yeah. And for the first 2 years afterwards, they didn't have any, they had a few disasters, new ones they added to the list, but they were nowhere near the magnitude of and things were getting better in the office. All this intangible benefits were happening. But Phil also tracked saying, all right, we went a year without our warranty going through the roof. We didn't pay $700,000 on this launch because like we did on that one or that one or that one or that one. And he tallied it all up saying, we have profit. We're not losing money. This is easy to quantify. This is the biggest change that we've made. This is allowing us to do better engineering. This is an added bonus to it. So it was tens of millions of dollars a year for a company that was, I think, maybe $50 million in sales of extra profit that they just were burning on, chasing failures and doing all these problems and paying warranties and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that quantification of the value, I'm quite sure if that market was still around, but it did for me, it made it, this is the most valuable thing I've ever seen. Now, the one flaw to it is that the step of generalizing helps you get to problems that you haven't experienced yet, right? But you can't overgeneralize it. You have to keep it succinct, tied to the story, underlying point of the story is making assumptions. In general, as we're all taught, you know, check your assumptions. But when it's tied to a story that's so vivid, it becomes something that people remember, and it becomes conscious part of their decision making. So that's the miracle part of what Phil did, is he took something that would could have been a database, it could have been, you know, just in the heads of a few people, and if they are not at the design review, it's never talked about, but made it part of the conscience of the organization. And it took him an hour, a project. That's the magic.
That's how you can institutionalize it.
Yeah, I think so. And then it's so valuable that there's going to be somebody that's going to have that task. It's just, you have to do this.
Yeah, the quantification of the value, to your point, shows that that role is required, basically, because it's the mechanism by which this is institutionalized.
Yeah. Now, and I've seen it implemented in other organizations, different size and complexity of projects and so on. And it does take the discipline to keep the list short. It falls apart when you get over a page. And and there's other nuances to it, but I've written about it, and I think I even did a webinar on it. It's called Golden Nuggets. If you search for that, you should find some other content on it.
Great.
So if you're interested in golden nuggets or how to lessons learned type stuff, you know, there's a couple of clues there for where to go look for some more of this, but it can be done. I've definitely seen it over and over again. And if you've got questions about that or other topics similar to this or different in reliability engineering, we would love to hear from you. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And you can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Mojan and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So plenty of ways for you to be part of the program. So, and we look forward to hearing from you. So how was that for an answer for your surprise topic here?
Excellent. Very much enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. So you have to try harder to surprise me, because I've told the story so many times.
Yeah, I think I've only done so many episodes. You've done like, 1,700? It's going to be hard to surprise you.
we'll find something. All right. It's my turn.
Yes, next time. I will take it as a challenge. Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. All right. Great. Thanks so much, Mojan. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.